The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
We're just about to get started, so just a couple quick housekeeping things. Could you please turn your cell phones or beeping devices, computers, etc., off or to silent? And please join us upstairs after the program where Professor Dyson will be signing copies of his books. And thank you so much for being so patient. I'm sure that this will be worth your time.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm sorry that we are late, and we certainly appreciate everyone's presence here tonight. It is my honor to be able to introduce tonight's guest. And, you know, I thought about reading his bio to you guys, but that should be on the back of the book. Many of you who know him know he's an extraordinary teacher, an extraordinary scholar, and he's probably the foremost black intellectual in the world at this particular moment. I have had the privilege of being his mentee. And I think that the best way to introduce him to you is to give you a sense of the impact that he has on the lives of young people, particularly scholars like myself. And to kind of keep it short, Dyson is a beacon in the academy. And what I mean by that is he is a figure who shines bright for young people to look to learn from, to be inspired by, and to be mentored by. But I think it's important that folks understand that mentorship is a very, very complicated and dedicated process, and Dr. Dyson does it better than any other scholar I've ever encountered in the academy. He not only leads by example, he not only provides intellectual support, he not only provides monetary support. Please, everybody, please. Okay. Not only monetary support, but the most important thing that Dr. Dyson does, and I think what really jumps off the pages of his books, is the ways in which he leads us spiritually and supports us spiritually and emotionally. So that being said, and looking forward to hearing him speak tonight, I will, without further ado, introduce to you Dr. Michael Eric Dyson.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. I appreciate that gracious and warm introduction, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to be able to come here back to my former home. I just left Philadelphia and to teach at Georgetown University, but for 5 years hung out here in Philly and had a wonderful time. And so good to see all the Phillyites and the Philadelphians and the Illadelph half-lifes out here tonight. And I just want to chat a bit. You know, people ask me on the radio today, am I going to do a reading? I said, no, I do the remix. I don't read. Try to talk a bit about the themes of the book. I want to thank Dr. James Peterson, one of the most brilliant young scholars in the nation. He's going to be on Hannity and Combs tonight. So if y'all are still here, you probably won't see him, but you can see the rerun later on Fox. He's going to be talking about the barrel of the N-word. So, you know, topics that are right at hand. This book, Know What I Mean, Reflections on Hip-Hop, is an attempt to engage a very vibrant culture in a very serious way. And I want to thank the Free Library of Philadelphia for affording me this opportunity, Brother Andy, Sister Sarah, with her gracious and warm spirit and hospitable demeanor, and for hosting us here tonight. When I envisioned this book, it was to engage in a series of dialogues about the very serious character of hip-hop culture, but also to engage some of the more controversial expressions of the art form. And that art form has, for the last 25 to 30 years, seized the imagination of the global landscape allowing young Black and Latino people, for the most part, to articulate their ideas of self-discovery in the midst of an aesthetic expression that continues to engage the imaginations of the nation and indeed the globe, and to generate controversy and commercial success. Though there has been much brouhaha occasioned by the declining sales of hip-hop, that's not all because of the eroding base of hip-hop, because people are tired of the holy trinity of some contemporary hip-hop, broads, bling, and booze. It is also because there's been a shift in the commercial base of distributing the art form and the technological basis through which the art form is distributed. So if you move from singles to ringtones and the digital market, necessarily, some of the album sales will decline. But you can't use that as the exclusive litmus test of the veracity or vitality of an art form, saying that people are simply tired of the madness, because that would mean that the so-called conscious artists would be outselling them. But the conscious artists can't even get played on radio, can't even get acknowledged, for the most part, for their ingenuity. And those people who claim they're tired of Snoop and tired of the gangster rap don't buy Talib Kweli. These cats drink champagne, toast death and pain like slaves on a ship bragging about who got the flyest chain. Don't support that. And even when we talk about hip-hop in its broadest form, we can't make rigid divisions between good hip-hop versus bad hip-hop, because some hip-hop artists embody in their own artistic quest and métier a rambunctious and restless quest for self-expression that sometimes leads them to say stuff that's great and edifying, and sometimes stuff that you think is silly and inane and sometimes destructive. And it's the same artist. Could be on the same album. Sometimes in the same song. Right? You take the same album, Tupac. Much respect to those who break their neck to keep their what in check. Oh, they will sweat a brother majorly, and I don't know why your girl keeps paging me. Then at the same time, he says, I give a shout to my sisters on welfare. If nobody cares, Tupac cares. So you got these contradictory gender visions that are at the heart of his artistic expression as a young man. And don't forget, most of these people we're talking about, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 years old, we're not looking to them as domestic Benjamin Spocks or Alvin Passants to lead and guide us through the quagmire and the meandering pathways of relationships. We ain't turning to Snoop to get any analysis of our relationships, although he offers plenty. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, into the foe. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance. So back on up, because you know we're about to wrap it up. Thank you, sir. We appreciate that. But at the same time, when we look at the broad landscape of hip-hop, we can't make these rigid divisions, because a guy like Jay-Z will have a song like Big Pimpin', and then God forgive me for my brash delivery, but I remember vividly what these streets did to me. Imagine allowing these cats to nitpick at me, portray me like a pickaninny. Now my teachers couldn't reach me, and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pops not seeing me. So, with that disdain in my membrane, got on my pimp game. Look at the raison d'etre. Look at the logic of explanation. Look at the evolution of consciousness and the way in which he begins to deconstruct and demystify and explain what the hell is going on in his own mind and why he was attracted to a lifestyle that people find fundamentally offensive. If you take a guy like Nas, in the thick of the commercial maelstrom of contemporary hip-hop, and yet at the same time spitting truths that are so eloquent and verbally complex, it's only right that I was born to use mics, and the stuff that I write is even tougher than dice. I'm taking rap into a new plateau through rap slow. My rhyming is a vitamin held without a capsule. A smooth criminal on beat breaks. Never put me in your box if your ish eats tapes. That's the raison d'etre of hip-hop philosophy. And so the point is that a lot of us would rather dismiss these young people as if they are coons or minstrels, ignoring the rhetorical dexterity and the profound complexity of their art form. And people who are Johnny-come-latelys, mad at hip-hop for all of its manifest drudgery, and it is plenty, The self-destruction is plenty. The homophobia, although most people don't even count that out because even the bourgeois Negro elite agrees with the homeboy from the hood that we don't really want to hear from no gay people. So that ain't no problem to them. That's why they ain't mad. They mad at what goes on with the female, but they ain't really mad at what goes on with the gay or lesbian body, the transgender bisexual body, even though, ironically enough, these folk occupy similar territory. There's a close link between homoeroticism and homophobia. Isn't it interesting? All these homophobic rappers, think about your man, I don't know, Fitty. Got your shirt all off and biceps bulging. Look like a Robert Mapplethorpe poster. I don't know what you heard about me, but I can get a dollar out of me. Then Snoop on the remix about a Rican, Puerto Rican from the boogie down. And I'm saying all of y'all with the Shirley Temple curls, how you gonna be homophobic, Holmes? And the reason hip-hop is so homophobic at a certain level is because there's such an intense homosocial desire being expressed. And the, you know, MOB, money over, you know, business. Thank you. Oh, you want the men over the women. That's bonding. No matter what happens, me and my boys, we riding out. Okay. Forget all them fine women in the video. It's MOB. So it is interesting that perhaps some of the tension in hip-hop is created because of the fact that they both, homosexuals and heterosexuals, want at the same body on the athletic field of contest. My man does well, pat him on the back, side. Tackle him on the ground, happy, writhing in passion. Turn the mute on and then see these dudes do their thing. Very interesting. And don't put it in slow-mo. And so, in my book, I want to deal with these tensions because it's never, people are always seeking this rigid bifurcation, this Manichaean distinction, this us versus them, this right versus wrong. No, it's not positive versus negative, it's complex versus simple. Because I can't get down with this positive versus negative because your positive could be my negative could be your positive. You know, we having this fight over the N-word now. I understand it. I understand why people are upset and mad, and I appreciate it. But don't be a racial fundamentalist. We burying the N-word. Be careful. Like Jesus, it might rise up in 3 days. My nigga, where did you come from? I thought we buried you. No, the Holy Ghost of the nigga, it lives. Now, don't get me wrong. I ain't for white people calling me nigga. There ain't no possible circumstance. You can be my boy till we say ship ahoy. And you play with a big toy, but we can't go there, boy. Look, we can't do that. Ain't nobody white calling me a nigga. Can't do it. Can't engage with that. But at the same time, when people say, well, if you expect white people to do it, why do you let black people do it? Well, don't make infants out of white people. They know the rules. They know the deal. They invented the term, nigga, that they know. It's they term. How you gonna be? They know. They know what it is and what it ain't. And some people are resentful. Why can't we use that term? I ain't mad at you. You can say everything else, mostly, but not that. That's the privilege of being. We should have some privilege. We can't get no tax write-off. Can't we just use nigga the way we want to? Now, I can understand if you're a black person who says that's awful and reprehensible. I dig that. I concede the legitimacy of that. But I'm Martin Luther King Jr., the night he was murdered, when Andrew Young came into the hotel room, grabbed a pillow and hit him on the head and said, little nigga, where you been? Did Martin Luther King Jr. hate himself? Was Martin Luther King Jr. inveterately opposed to the expansion of black consciousness? Look at all the arguments you're making. They just don't hold up underwater. And I ain't mad at the NAACP, but ain't there some more important stuff you can be doing? Like the homicide rate in Philadelphia? Like why there's an over-incarceration of young black and brown men and poor white men are suffering in the society? How about let's deal with that? Is there a problem? Are there problems in the schools that we could deal with? It's not the name nigga, it's the category of nigga that persists beyond the name. Now, I must confess that I'm a promiscuous user of the term. But I understand why it offends certain people. Paul said, if meat offends my brother in the Bible, I won't eat meat. If saying nigga, incites some black people, I try to refrain from it in public, unless I got a black audience that understands what I'm saying. And there's a difference between nigger, a white supremacist epithet hurled with lethal intensity at the necks of poor, vulnerable black people, and nigga. And niggas, and niggas. I mean, there's differences. Now, sometimes black people mean the same thing white people mean when they say nigga. Nigga. Sometimes we mean something endearing. Nigga. Sometimes we question, nigga what? But at the same time, when it gets on a CD record and gets global consumption, maybe there's a problem with that in the public consumption of nigga, because now you got Japanese brothers and sisters with dreads who don't speak English going, what up, my nigga? Maybe that's problematic, and maybe they only see niggas when the black people come to town. So let's not pretend it's unchallenged and uncomplicated. It's complicated, but I'm saying let's not be reductive and narrow in our particular vision of what is going on. And so, bearing the N-word, let's bury the possibility of the categorization of people as demonized. It's like the same thing, getting rid of the word bitch and hoe. You can suppress it, but if you're still treating a woman that way, go to church on Sunday morning and see 75 to 80% of the black church constituted by black women going into the institution that they numerically dominate, giving all of their money, their hard-earned money, paying the tithes of the preacher who is sexist against them. He ain't calling you a bitch or a hoe, but he might as well be saying it. Right? He's dressing it up in theological terms, but really, you an ecclesiastical hoe and a theological bitch? Man, I'm just passing through. I'm going on. You a black woman and a man trying to tell you, well, don't listen to those white women. The feminist movement is something that is against the nature of truth for black people. We have to get our free from racism first. Baby, that ain't gonna never happen, so don't wait that long. Telling black women to wait until racism is destroyed and see white women as their enemy, that's reductive and silly. Because some white women have been much more instructive and edifying and helpful to black women than have been some black men. I mean, we can't just go with blackness, Clarence Thomas, Condoleezza Rice. Don't tell me that. And so women going to church, subject to ecclesiastical apartheid. 75 to 80% of black women, they can cook, they can clean, they can sew, they can clean up, they can run Sunday school, but they can't preach at the church as if the word of God has been quarantined. If your God is as powerful as you say, you mean God in the Bible says the rocks will cry out if nobody is there? If God can call an inanimate object to preach, God can't call a woman to preach? What's wrong with God? What's wrong with God? I thought you had all power. You can't call a woman to preach, but you can Reverend Rock? We try to dress up our bigotry in our Bible, whether it's your imam in your Muslim circles, that too, whether it's your preacher or your bishop, but we give them a full pass and we seize on to young rappers who never claimed to be called. Diddy didn't claim to be called, just a shot caller. Reverend so-and-so says, I'm telling you this based on what God told me. Jay-Z said, I'm from the place where the churches are the flakiest. Niggas been praying to God so long, they atheists. So Just let that rest on your brain a little bit. Obviously, it's not effective. You've been praying so long without results, you might as well not believe. So I'm saying the reason people say, well, Dyson, you got a PhD from Princeton. Why would you dare somehow uncritically valorize or celebrate or edify or elevate these rappers? I don't. But the problem is people are so ready and rabid in renouncing the rhetorical rapid fire genius of their children that they overlook what's there. And hip hop is a grossly complex phenomenon. So in 5 chapters, I'm trying to spit that truth, trying to talk about gender long before Don Imus, because I ain't going to let the gender of our community be determined by Don Imus. I mean, Don, bless his heart. You know, he's a rich cat. He's going to be all right. You know, and people get away with beating up on vulnerable populations like women. Just talk about women all the time. Talk about gay people all the time. Talk about black people all the time. Talk about Jews all the time. Just talk about people who are sexual and ethnic and racial minorities and get away with it. It's all cute, and all these powerful media figures were on his show, but all of a sudden, when he did that nappy-headed hoe and then called on Spike Lee to support him, right, the movie, The Jigaboos versus the Wannabes, that was really very, see, people miss that. That was about dark skin versus light skin. That was about the demonization of dark black skin, African noses, protruding prognoxes, right? The big nose, the nostril, the big beautiful lips, the rounded hips, the gluteus emphasis on maximus, all there, if relevant. And so Don was really saying that dark-skinned black women, he said they were nappy-headed, most of them had straight hair. His bigotry was so deep, it affected his ophthalmology. Ain't but one or two of them had so-called nappy hair, the rest of them had straight hair. What you looking at, Holmes? Because bigotry is a set of lens that shapes the context and the content of what we perceive. The optic nerve turns images upside down to order the universe of sight. And so hip-hop, is it messed up? A lot of it is, but most art is messed up. Most R&B is crazy. It ain't really that good. Most opera ain't that deep. Like any other art form, country music, although there's a lot of good stuff in country music now. I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. I love that country music. I'm going to write a book on that, man. A black man with a tall hat. I'm going to do something like that. I love them country boys because they got a sense of humor, too. And the women. All my exes live in Texas. That's why I live in Tennessee. Some Patsy Cline. I go walking after midnight. Love that twang, that weeping mandolin, that great steel guitar. But the point is, a lot of that stuff ain't that great in most music. And then people hold hip-hoppers to account the way they don't hold them. Did they say, has Brian McKnight spoken out against the war? Brian just trying to step up on the box and let the wind blow his shirt open. Trying to say, check me out. Right? Ain't nobody asking, right, if Johnny Gill has spoken out against racism. Rub you the right way, stroke. That's all he said. Nobody asked Luther Vandross. Don't you remember? I told you I loved you, baby. Baby, baby, ooh, baby, baby. That's all I want them to talk about. Don't mention nothing about war. Just help me make peace. So the point is, why are we going to hold a hip-hop like every record got to be socially conscientious? Even Marvin Gaye made What's Going On. 2 years later, made Let's Get It On. Went from Rockets, Moonshot, Spend It On the Have-Nots, Make Me Want to Holler, Throw Up Both My Hands. Then he said, I don't see nothing wrong with you. Giving yourself to me can never be wrong. If the spirit moves you, let me groove you. He said, gives you a good feeling, something like sanctified.
Sanctified.
Wow. My point simply is, that's not to dismiss the necessity for responsibility of hip-hop artists to be in command and control of the art form that we know is pushed along by commercial dictates that says you gotta rap about bouncing behinds and belligerent bosoms, that you have to subordinate the concerns of women to men, that you have to ignore the complex and profound expression of art that a guy like Mos Def would do. But don't forget, Mos Def on the same album. Ass so fat you could see it from the front. Wow, really? I mean, let's just do an ethnographic study of that. What? Same album. You can laugh and criticize Michael Jackson if you wanna. Woody Allen molested and married his stepdaughter. Same press kicking dirt on Michael's name. Show Woody and Sunny at the playoff game holding hands. Now sit back and think about that. Would he get the same dap if his name was Woody Black? OJ acquitted by a jury of his peers. They've been messing with their brother for the last 10 years. Is it fair? Is it equal? Is it just? Is it right? Do we do the same thing if the defendant's face is white? White boy's doing it well as success. I start doing it well as suspect. They say they want you successful, but then they make it stressful. You start keeping pace. They start changing up the tempo. Same album. And that song is named from one of the most politically astute and conscientious rappers, Mr. Nigga. That's why you can't get rid of the term that easily. If you get rid of the word bitch, you can't have U-N-I-T-Y. Who you calling a bitch or a hoe? And she makes distinctions even in the song. Now, if we plan, it's cool. Let's get along. But don't be stepping down the street trying to step to me or I'll pop you in the head. That's complex. Not positive versus negative. Complex versus simplistic. And so all I'm saying as I take my seat before we answer questions is that this hip-hop culture is something that needs to be engaged. You have to be informed about why do people think they can say something about hip-hop and don't know nothing about it? Don't know the difference between MC Ren and Ice Cube and Dr. Yella versus, you know, Lauryn Hill, Bahama Dia. Lauryn Hill said, even after all my logic and my theory, I add an MF so you ignorant niggas hear me. Conscious manipulation of rhetorical form to assert content-based knowledge. And so don't sleep on what your own children are doing. Standing by the speaker, suddenly I had a fever. Was it me or either summer madness? Because I just can't stand around, so I get closer, and the closer I get, the better it sounds. My mind starts to activate. Rhymes collaborate, because when I heard the beat, I just had to make something from the top of my head. So I fell into the groove of the wax, and I said, how can I move the crowd? First of all, ain't no mistakes allowed. And when you look at it that way, hip-hop's pilgrimage has been about the constant evolution of purpose. Has it fallen to the wayside in many instances? Absolutely right. Has a lot of that stuff been mind-numbingly insistent upon just doing nothing? True. But you can say that about a bunch of art forms. You say that about gospel music. Most of gospel music is whack. I'm sorry, it ain't got nothing to do with Jesus. Right? Just because you saying Jesus don't make a good song. You just be lying. Jesus will never say no. Stop lying. He told your butt no this morning. No!
No.
So some of this suspect theological stuff, we just got to get rid of anyhow. And so for me, when I look at hip-hop and I look at its complexity, its nuance, its evolution, its commercial, its underground, its statement of purpose, its constant reinvigoration of the art form, and just when you don't expect it, something new and different comes along to engage it. I mean, you couldn't have predicted a Kanye West, really. You know, he's an interesting kind of cat. You know, singing on the one hand, you know, one glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away, oh, I'll fly away, sweet Jesus. Then next song, if this manager keeps assaulting me, I will be assaulting him after I the manager up. I'm going to shorten the cash register up. My kind of Christian. I mean, that's, yeah, that's complex right there. And so let's deal with complexity versus simplicity, not positivity versus negativity, and then let's engage our children, then we can be critical. But if you ever listen to your kids' music long enough and learn some of their stuff, they'll be more impressed that you at least took the time to learn some of the lyrics of their music. Just go in their room one day. Just break them off. Now get your butt up. Now walk it out. Just, yeah, just show them you got a little hipness. They, oh, mama, okay. Then they're willing to hear you more decently and in order. God bless you. All right, so I think we're going to have some Q&A, some wisdom dropping, and some sage sharing right now, mostly from y'all to me. So, yes, ma'am, right here.
Okay, I have two questions.
Okay, let me see if I can remember.
What did Georgetown offer you that lured you away, and what will you be doing down at Georgetown now that they have you?
Well, I could tell you, but I might have to hurt you. You know what? Thank you for that question. You know what? It's not so much that I left, you know, although I obviously left Pennsylvania. It's not so much. I love University of Pennsylvania. They treated me like a king. I can't even lie to you. You know, shook the haters off real quick. Because you always got haters. You know, when you're doing the kind of visible stuff as an academic and you ain't really supposed to be doing that, you're supposed to be in the academy with your books, researching. And I'm cool with that. I love that. I do that. I write 15. This is my 15th book, so I'm on my grind, cousin. Yeah, you know what? Still getting it in. Coke is my sponsor. Not diet. No, sir. I lost no weight. That's for the heads out there. You know what I'm saying? So I'm doing my work there, but I also like to talk about stuff in a way that people beyond my particular discipline can understand. So Georgetown offered the possibility of relocating to Washington, D.C. during this heightened, heady political season where I'm trying to oust the cat up in there and his party. Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back, you know, so. And his party, so I want to be up in that mix, you know. I'm Obama, my wife is Hillary. So, you know, we got a mixed marriage, you know what I'm saying? She go downstairs and talk secretly. I go upstairs and talk secretly. We trying to strategize. Go Obama, Hillary Clinton. So, because we trying to get in the Lincoln White House and bedroom regardless. Oh, we got to do it the other way, right? So it's a heady time to be there. Georgetown is a first-rate world-class institution that offers the possibility of studying some of the issues I've been writing about. You know, poverty, Hurricane Katrina, my argument with Mr. Cosby. Wanted to get away from Philly. And the people have to let him go. I love Cosby, you know what I'm saying? My man. Because, you know, he's been changing a little bit. There's a little pressure from Dyson. Don't get it twisted. You know, you got to change it. Like, I got to, you know, look at him and say, yep, he got some point. Let's deal with it. You know, let's argue. And let's argue fairly. All I was trying to say, Ms. Cosby, is just don't be beating up on people. Offer them a possibility of changing once you analyze they're wrong. That's all. It's because if you push me against the wall, sometimes the only way out is through your butt. Give me some space to negotiate. So Georgetown offers that possibility of a laboratory of social ill and possibility in Washington, D.C., the most interesting political atmosphere right now, at least in America. And I want to help change some of that stuff. So it just offered that opportunity. When I get there, I'm what they call a university professor, which is just a big old fancy title. It means I can teach whatever I want in whatever department because they think, you know, I'm that kind of brother. And so that's what I'll be doing there. And still visiting Philly often as I can because I just love the Philly spirit. I just love the beautiful, sensuous, articulable spiritual realities that course through the veins of this incredible city. So just love being here. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, and oh, I'm sorry. Over here.
Okay. My mic. All right. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that as far as the comment you made about don't give white people too much credit as far as using the word ho, what they like to do a lot of times is say ho about a little girl playing basketball and say, well, rappers use it in hip hop. And it's simple as you can't call somebody that's not a hoe or a bitch that's not, you know, you can't do that. Mm. My question to you is about the Bill Cosby situation. I was actually at Morehouse's commencement in 2004 where he gave the same exact speech, but a lot longer. And it was actually a good speech, though. I mean, I brought the tape home and showed all my boys and I mean, it hit home for me a lot,
right,
too.
Right,
and I
right.
just kind of wondered, like, I know he's one of the Johnny Come Latelys that you're talking about, because while he had the opportunity to really express his power, and he was a real influential, he, you know, shied away from it. Didn't
right,
talk
right.
about it in his comedy, anything like that.
Right.
Isn't it better late than never? And if he didn't, you know, wasn't so forceful with his opinions, how would we really take it? Would we be talking about it 3 years later?
That's a great point. Well, let me deal with both issues. First of all, it wasn't about Johnny Come Lately, though you're right. Let's not fail to mention that, because we take rappers apart and they're 25 years old. So take a 67-year-old cat real seriously, right? Don't be hypocritical. You're going to deconstruct and demythologize and understand every iteration possible of Snoop at 27. But a 67-year-old guy, well, he just was off the cuff. Wait a minute now, don't be contradictory. Because he was spitting, you know what I'm saying? He was spitting. Now, so it's not as Johnny Come Lately said, as though that is true. It is what he said to me was fundamentally wrong, in my opinion. So it's whether he said it at 27 or 67, right? Because I think that to dismiss the structural realities that we are confronted with in a culture of poverty misses how there's been a war on the poor. So I was arguing about his analysis, not just when he made it. Now, let's be true. You're right. When you got all the power and you missed the Huxtable, you could really make a difference. But you didn't do it. You don't want to mess with your pocketbook. So don't be mad at rappers not messing with their pocketbook, Holmes. I'm just saying. And when they asked him at the same age he is at most rappers, 26, 27 years old, they said, what do you expect to do with your great art? He said, I got a job. I'm trying to get rich. Damn art. And he wanted to do something else that I'm not going to say here. According to his manager. That's all right. According to his manager. But you can read my book. It's in there. In the footnotes. So what's interesting is not that Mr. Cosby himself was unfamiliar with the same temptations to want to get rich and get paid that rappers are. And he was a pitchman for Jell-O Pudding Pop, E.F. Hutton, Coca-Cola, and Ford. If he had come along now, he'd have been pitching gym shoes. Because that's what's hot. That's all I'm saying. That's in my book. Quote me again. And all I said is that if you're going to beat up on black people with Poe English, I ain't mad at that, but don't call Ebonics Poe English. Ebonics is a complex linguistic negotiation. Ebonics, this young man, Dr. James Peterson, who introduced me, PhD in linguistics and writing on the underground in hip-hop at the University of Pennsylvania. I mean, zero copula characterizes Ebonics, zero copula. What's a copula? Form of the verb to be. Not I am going, I be going. That's different. I am going suggests presently I'm engaged in activity where I'm headed. I be going suggests constantly and repetitively I am going. I be going there all the time. It's a different meaning. I was at Princeton University getting a PhD in religion, took German. This is no lie. The instructor said there is no tense available in English to receive the interpretation and translation of this term except in black English it bees like that. I said to myself, I know Negroes had it right all along. Now, that don't mean I'm trying to tell people go around like, you know, huh? What? That's just Poe English. Look at your president. What is he speaking? Hillbilly Onyx? I mean, what is he doing? Is our kids educated yet? Oh, my Jesus. He been to Harvard and Yale. And I tell my son, be multilingual. Freak it every way you possible. I said, that's what I try to do. Because whatever they come at me, I'm a freak it on multiple levels simultaneously. Right? I'm going to speak to King's English, to the Queen's taste. I could do that. I love that. I was a weird little Negro child. Reading the Harvard classics growing up. Though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength, which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive to seek to find and not to yield. That was my métier. That was Alfred Lord Tennyson in Ulysses, or Thomas Gray's Elegy in a Courtyard. Full many a gem of purest ray serene, the dark unfathomed caves of ocean bare. Full many a flowers born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. I love that. But that didn't mean I couldn't appreciate another great poet named William Robinson. I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. I guess you say, what can make me feel this way? My girl. It's great poetry. It ain't either or. So the point is with Mr. Cosby is that why you been, and check this out. When you were at the center of the culture, you ain't said nothing on your show, you ain't talked about it, you ain't talked about racism, don't act like rich black people don't talk about it. You know, they said for the first time, which is true, it was a tremendous show. I loved it. I watch it every week. Still got it on DVD. I'm a fan of Cosby in a serious way. Right? I even got the Chet Kincaid series that came out. Went and bought it. I love Cosby. Seriously. I mean, I know his routine. And the big gun, I know him. Dude's a comic genius, man, just in his face. He got more stuff in his face than people got in their bodies. So I don't sleep on his genius, but I'm saying that when you had the command of the culture, as you said, you ain't said a damn thing. And he said on Phil Donahue, 1984-85, why I got to be the black man to represent, why do I have to talk about race when I come on the show? Why don't you ask the white people about race? Don't ask me, I'm not a leader. I agree. And ain't much changed since then. So how all of a sudden you gonna stand up and lecture Negroes? And you know what? One thing that burns me is the lack of humility. Damn, why don't you say you messed up too? See, you ain't gonna see me standing around talking no perfection about nobody's marriage, or women, and what they done. Cause look, I'm a freak. And I done messed up. I've tried to be a reformed, dutiful husband, but I done made some mistakes. Right? For the most part, I've been on the up and up, but I didn't mess up too. So I'm not going, if you see me up here lying, you know, the poor people have to get their families together. That's when you go, nigga, please. What you doing? So you ain't going to see me rolling that way. You're going to see me begging for grace and mercy. Lord, help me out. Let me stay on the straight and narrow for the most part. I'm praying to pray the prayer, let me stay on the straight and narrow all the time. But my point is simply this. Even when we strive for perfection, and certainly I'm trying to and you're trying to, the reality is we fall and we fail. So don't beat up on poor people and don't demonize them and hurt them and harm them in ways that are destructive. That's what I'm arguing. And so I think that Mr. Cosby has been an ingenious performer. I think he's a horrible social critic. His statistics are messed up. His spirit is right, I think, in some ways, and it's wrong in others. Because if what you want to do is reinforce prevailing stereotypes about poor black people that really fails to challenge white supremacy or even call them to account, those who argue it, whether they're black or white or Latino, then what you're doing to me is using your colossal foot on the vulnerable necks of people who deserve better. And so that's what I was arguing with Mr. Cosby. There's a lot more, but you can read the book and see it there. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Thanks for calling on me. I'm Ronald Crawford. I'm a therapist who works with at-risk adolescents in Western North Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm finishing up a book on hip-hop and where I try to increase the readership of members of hip-hop culture by embracing hip-hop, doing a lot of what you're doing. One question is, what advice would you give to aspiring authors who are writing about topics such as hip-hop?
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, what is it that I can do to sort of enlighten people about the need for engaging, improving people's behavior health? Because if you take the example of a woman being raped, you don't tell her after 2 years, get over it. Mm-hmm. I believe that a lot of what has happened to people of color can be diagnosed as either depression, post-traumatic stress. Just one example, can you imagine seeing someone's brains on the pavement and what that would do to you, the level of depression? Mm-hmm. And those things are not addressed. And what can we do as a people to sort of address those things?
No, it's a great point, Dr. Crawford. Thank you so much. That's all right, Doc. Okay. But you know what? Given what you're doing, you doctor to me, Doc. You know what I'm saying? We give you PhD power to handle the devil. We can do that. And the data. That's important, too. But thank you for your humility. I think that as a just to say you're a therapist in a predominantly black audience is beautiful. You know, black people are like, I ain't going no therapist. Your ass need to go. Yeah. You really do. Please, you bipolar, you tripolar, you quadrupolar. Whoa. Now all I need is Jesus. No. No, your ass needs some Prozac. You know,
You need medicine. Chemical reaction. Then Jesus can look different to you. Even Jesus said, hey! So, that's a beautiful thing, because we need to admit, you talk, I'm taking in first, then come to the other part, post-traumatic stress, well, you know, 400 years, a bunch of stuff, it's a wonder we ain't crazy. Lionel Richie says, a wonder I ain't lost my mind. Anyway, so just meditate on Lionel there for a minute. Because musicians have been our therapists. Right? Marvin Gaye, when we couldn't afford, you know, we got Dr. Feelgood. When we couldn't afford Dr. Jones. Don't send me no doctor. Filling me up with no pills. I got a man named Dr. Feelgood. Aretha Franklin, she was a therapist for real. Aretha worked out and massaged the crinkly parts of our spirit. So Marvin Gaye was a therapist for us. Anger will make you sick, children. I had to leave you for my mind's sake and my heart's sake, right? Look at his breakup album, Hear My Dear. That's one of the most brilliant artistic documents of internal dissension with oneself and coming to an awareness of one's own unanimity of purpose. I mean, check that album out. Going through some changes and documenting them. It was deep. So first of all, post-traumatic stress from not only slavery and Jim Crow and self-hatred and learning not to love ourselves and therefore having to dominate somebody else. You know, cats who try to dominate women because they insecure themselves. You know, young people who are viciously assaulted because older people can't acknowledge their humanity. You know, we in a lot of trouble in this community. Hating on other people because we ain't satisfied with ourselves. Stop being obsessed with other people and concentrate on yourself. So all that's in the mix. And so I'm just glad you're a therapist and talking about that with black people who've been taught that, you know, somehow it's against God if you talk to somebody. More of us need to talk to somebody. Because maybe God been trying to tell you to talk to somebody. That's maybe what that's God wants you to do.
I've been telling you, fool.
Right?
The couch. Not for that, but for that.
Well, sometimes both. But, you know, so to back up, though, I'm so glad you as a therapist are talking to these young people because, you know, a guy came up to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, man, your book on Tupac saved me. He said, because Tupac, I listened to him one night, he saved my life. This guy was crying, made me cry. Somebody wake me, I'm dreaming. I started as a seed, the semen swimming upstream, planted in the womb while screaming. On the top was my pops, my mama hollering, stop, from a single drop. This is what they got? Not to disrespect my people, but my papa was a loser. Only plan he had for mama was the fucker and abuser. And even as a child, I could see his plan for me stranded on welfare. Another broken family. Now that's deep, passionate, internal argument. And trying to deal with the psychosis and the neurosis and the painful trauma that people endure. You know? And so to talk to these young people like you do, to help them understand that the music can become a way of dealing with their own internal demons, haunting their collective imagination, that's a deep thing. And so it's necessary, and I applaud you in whatever we can do. You know, you got to get an agent, get a literary agent that will work with you to help you shape that book and move forward. Talk to Dr. James Peterson before you leave. He's working on a couple books right now. Real smart cat. He can help you. I can help you. But the important thing is to have passion and purpose and clarity. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, to be able with multiple strands and streams of publication now, you know, it's much more encouraging for people to be able to do something. But people would be interested in that from a therapeutic viewpoint of what hip-hop can do, as opposed to just demonizing it. Most therapists want to say it hurts the minds of young people. Now, maybe some of it does. I'm not denying that there's not a negative relationship that's born out when you only glamorize and glorify violence. Because all you see is violence. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. I'm addicted to violence myself at a certain level.
Look how they massacred my boy.
It's The Godfather. You know what I'm saying? Don't sleep on that. I know they put Citizen Kane as the greatest movie. It's The Godfather, okay? Maybe Citizen Kane number two. Maybe three after Godfather 2. But you know. Okay, Chinatown's up there too. But see, I'm saying, I mean, and then when the Frank Sinatra character comes to him, oh, Godfather, he won't let me have that part in the movie. You can be a man! Pops him in the head, right? I mean, The Godfather is the reimagination of ethnic roots as the basis of immigration and the expansion of opportunity. What's the opening words of The Godfather? I believe in America. The tension. But I need a protector because the legal system won't provide the protection I need. And The Godfather said, if you had come to me first, this night the man who hurt your daughter would be suffering. But you don't even think to kiss my ring and call me Godfather.
Help me out, Godfather.
Why am I remembering all these lines? Adrian! Violence in its almost eroticized form. So we began to make taxonomies of violence, and some are acceptable. See, when Thelma and Louise got the gun, oh, it was a damn problem there. Hey, what's wrong here? By Jiminy Christmas, it's wrong for women to do that. Now, it's more violence in the first 5 minutes of Lethal Weapon than all of Thelma and Louise. But when women got the gun, brothers get hurtful. Oh, wait a minute. Right? We get scared because now we ain't in control. Men are not dominant. So it depends on who's the subject of violence, who's the object of violence. And we are all addicted at some level to rhetorical and, you know, systemic violence. And what we have to do is to wean ourselves from it in certain ways and see that it can be productive in a certain way. I'd rather people look at, you know, I'd rather people talk about, you're a toy gangster. Please keep being a toy gangster. You're a studio gangster. Thank God. Stay in the studio. I'm saying shoot everybody up in there. I'ma shoot you and I'ma shoot you two. And then I'ma shoot you three and shoot you deep. I'ma do it again. Oh, great, great, great. And then go home to your suburban crib and chill out. But then be more careful the next record. Because while you chilling at your suburban crib, some kid in the inner city who can't make that distinction may be seduced into believing that what you're spitting is true. So I hold you accountable for that as well. It's a complex phenomena. So I think you as a therapist can help us understand that in a broad perspective. That would... Yeah, no doubt. And you can help me too. Help me in my addiction. You know what I'm saying?
Now, if somebody hurts my son, this I will not forgive.
All right. Yeah. Yes, over here. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this question is for anybody in academia, but of course, because you're on the stage, it has to be addressed.
Hey, well, let the audience do it. That's great.
Well,
I'm tired of working. Go ahead.
Well, sometimes I wonder about this within black studies, because I believe you consider yourself a black scholar or someone who studies African-American studies or within that category. Do you find it problematic that sometimes we are possibly preaching to the choir, where we address the wrong people, where at being at Penn or being at Harvard or being at Georgetown, that we are, in fact, teaching white students, privileged white students, about black culture, whereas we should be possibly going into the inner city or going into certain parts of Philadelphia, New York, Chicago, Boston, so forth, and actually giving the message to the people who truly need it instead of teaching it to privileged white people?
That's a great point. It's a great point. Now, I'm looking at my audience now. This looks like privileged white people to me. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, man, I spend most of my time outside the Privileged White Academy, though. Let me just be real. Let me see where have I been the last week. L.A. on the hip-hop in the last month. L.A., the hip-hop summit. Let's see, Essence Music Festival down in New Orleans, speaking in the Ninth Ward. Moving beyond the Ninth Ward into the broader New Orleans arena. Then calling for a march, a return to New Orleans on August 29th. I say, y'all, we got to get back down there. We got to get madder than hell. Visiting prisons to speak to young people who are incarcerated. In fact, I ain't been to the White Privilege Academy in the last month. But I don't buy into that bifurcation. Let me tell you why. First of all, there are a lot of black students at these schools who need to be taught too. What you gonna do? Leave them alone? But I'm trying to teach some white folk, too, because if somebody had got to George Bush, we might not be suffering right now. Hell, somebody get to his white behind. Another informed white person or another black person, Latino woman, somebody help him out. So I don't want to leave him just to the ethers. Or as Biz Markie, I saw him on my same plane coming in from, she caught the vapors. I'm like, you got what I need. Sorry for these ellipses. So to me, when people say, well, you're at Harvard or Princeton, well, I did go to Princeton, got a PhD, did teach at Brown, not Ivy League school, did teach at Columbia, not Ivy League school, did teach at Penn, not Ivy League school, now I'm at Georgetown, big time school. True, I stand accused. But what I'm saying is that, first of all, ain't nobody at the black school ever invited me to teach there. That's number one. Let me hold on, because I know what your response is. Well, you're rich and famous, and they can't afford you. When I was a poor broke nigga, they didn't invite me. And I wasn't a scholar then, I was a nigga. They reminded me and said, nigga, we don't know you. The hell you gonna lecture on? But I'm a scholar. The hell you ain't. Now it takes the white people to give me recognition for my intellectual acuity, and you gonna then call me? Nigga, please. I'm not the nigga to be messing with on that level. So I'm saying to you, first of all, I wouldn't go to some of these black schools because they're so conservative and reactionary. They don't even teach black studies. Because they have a white European model, which was valid back in the 1800s, because their purpose was to be agriculture and technical institutions to teach our kids how to survive, number one. And number two, to teach a curriculum that was based in the mainstream community. So ironically enough, they still stuck in that past. They ain't up with area studies, women's studies, African-American studies. That's ironic. You think because you're at a black school, you don't need to study your own people? You think everything is black? Black mathematics, black geography? So you don't need to study your own people? What kind of racism is that? That makes you believe you don't even have to interrogate your, just because you black and come to my class, you think you know something over the white people who are willing to read the book and you just gonna bullshit? Did I say that word? Was that in my mind? I don't know if it came out of my mouth. You're going to pontificate and prevaricate and flirt in certain forms of dominant, you know, mastery and master, but no. And I say most black kids do, because most black kids come to my room and study hard. But every now and again, I catch one that thinks, you know, like I'm going to talk about what happened in the hood. No, tell me what happened on page 98 of Du Bois. So my point is this, that's a false dichotomy, and I want to help you, hopefully, challenge that dichotomy and say, first of all, that those of us who teach in some of these institutions hopefully are some of the most righteous black people around, and some of the black people teaching at black institutions could be some of the most corny around and self-destructive and hurtful to our kids. So don't assume because you're teaching at black school, oh, I had somebody roll up on me. Yeah, why you at a black school? You know, I didn't even know him. It was a party in my honor. And he's trying to dog me. I was trying to chill because I don't want to cut him. I'm like, hey, bruh. Damn, domains, I'm just trying to do me. If the record's 2 mil, I'm just trying to move 3. Trying to get these cats to menage a trois before I hit the garage. Education, incitement, and spirit. Those are the 3 things I'm talking about in menage a trois. So then he kept pushing me. I said, nigga, just because you couldn't get tenure to white school and got sent down to a black school, don't act like I'm wrong. And the woman went, ooh, how did you know that? My son is a Morehouse grad. He just graduated. What I'm telling you, Morehouse is a great institution, produced the greatest leader of a black people, Martin Luther King Jr. But I'm saying, don't, and I'm glad you asked that. How a Morehouse grad should take that is how I took it when I was stood by my son this year for 547 black men who graduated from Morehouse, that he got a daddy who had enough damn sense to send him there. Number one. Number two, what's important is that why would you talk about me not being at Morehouse when you got great teachers there already? I'm the only teacher in the world that's qualified? They got great teachers there whose names you never know. But they're brilliant, they're dedicated, they're committed, and they're loyal. So every time I hear somebody go, how come you ain't teaching? Can every Negro be at every Negro institution in the world? No. Some of us are called to different vineyards. If Howard were to actually holler at me, I could have responded. You didn't hear what I said. Let me say it again, people. They never invited me. They read the same friggin' paper and read the same books. I ain't mad at them because I preach there every year. But don't act like I'm going to go without an invitation. Georgetown hollered at me. Holler. Holler. Penn hollered at me. But don't take what I'm saying. Every one of my kids have gone to black schools. Morehouse, Spelman. My one son went to Livingstone College, Grambling, Morris Brown. Morehouse, then went to Morris Brown, then went back to Morehouse. I'm a one man United Negro College Fund. Damn it, a mine is a terrible thing to waste, and my pocketbook is hurting. All of them have been there. I started at Knoxville College. So you're not telling me something I don't know. What I'm saying to you, I'm not going to let you make me feel that somehow, because I'm teaching at an institution like that, that I've lost veracity, connection. I got more freedom than people who teach four classes a semester to go out here and help black people than they do. Let me tell you what. They got to teach four and five and six classes. They are heroes. I don't see how to do it. I ain't taught six classes in the last 3 years. That's why I can write. That's why I can range out here and do my thing. Because of their hard work, I'm able to do what I do. But I'm saying, just because Michael Jordan out there don't mean you don't need people who are Michael Jordans in their fields. I'm not saying I'm Michael Jordan. I want to get deeper than that. What I'm saying to you is that there is a possibility that we are called to different venues for different actions at different points in time. Why are we so insecure as to believe that the people who are at these black institutions don't have the intellectual acuity to train our children? I'm glad and honored and flattered that you think I'm one of the ones who should be there. And if I should have been there, how come they didn't recognize it in a way? If you can't acclaim the process, don't grab the product. I was being made and I was begging. I used to call up. Let me tell you what else. I didn't want to say it publicly, but damn. Kind of nigga I am. I'm gonna tell you, I used to call the black schools up because I needed money for my family. That's why I try to help young people now, because I was making no money and called some of these black schools up. Let me come there. You don't have a name. Now that I got a name, you can't afford me. Don't be mad because you played the game in the market. So I'm saying learn to nurture and bring along. And I love black institutions. I spend a lot of time there every year. And let me tell you what, don't tell the white people I work for. Sometimes I get money from the white folks so I can help the Negroes. Don't tell them I said that. I'll lie and said, I never said that. No, not at all. I'm committed to you and you alone. So if I got the skill and the opportunity to be able to use the dime from the dominant culture to help somebody over here, and if some of my students were here who were black who could stand up and testify, don't do it. Because it might be rough. And they might agree with y'all. But my point is that, look, I believe in black institutions. I believe they should prosper. I believe some of them are reactionary and conservative, and a Negro like me would be problematic. Because some black institutions, let's be real, if we're going to get real nitty-gritty, are run like fiefdoms. Some presidents think they got of these black institutions. And they don't operate by tenure. Nigga, I said you're going. Bye. You're gone. I'm not going to be subject to that. I don't work too hard to get what I got in learning to defer to somebody whose intellectual quotient would really scarcely begin to challenge George Bush. I don't pretend that. Just because you black don't mean you right. I'm sorry. You know what I'm saying? Step up and be a real intellectual. Most of them in the black schools are. And I got so many black friends calling me, can you get me out? Can you get me out of the black school? I love it, but I'm teaching 25 classes. I ain't got time to wipe my nose. So I'm saying to you, there are a variety of reasons. I love these black institutions. Most of them have tremendous scholars, and most of them are worth. In fact, every one of them that I've ever visited is worth its weight in gold. And what we should do is to support them. But we shouldn't demonize the folk who are outside of those institutions who are doing the work up in here. Because look at some of the people doing it. William Jewis Wilson, University of Chicago, done wrote about poor black people. So is Elijah Anderson. University of Chicago, Harvard, now Yale, West, Gates, bell hooks. Yeah. But look at the work that they're able to do to help black people understand themselves and organize the logic of their existence. So don't just demonize them because they ain't there, because all of us can't be there, especially when those institutions may not see a role for us to play that would allow us the vital creativity that draws you to this institution tonight. Just give me that opportunity to do that. And when we do that, then we can say the people who are there are great and the people doing the other stuff are great. Now, some of the people at the black institutions are handkerchief head Negroes who are on a plantation. And some of the black folk at the white institutions are handkerchief head Negroes who are polishing the apple of the teacher of white supremacy. Let's just be real. And there are diamonds in each place. Let's acknowledge the legitimacy and the validity of either. All right. Yes, ma'am. I got you right down here. Question down here.
I just happen to be a black woman who believes in the black church, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to know, could you tell me what I could say to someone in terms of why they should support the church or why they should not?
It was a lot of static. I didn't hear that question. Next, let me say another. Sister, put me on the spot, didn't you? Yes, ma'am. Woke up this morning with my mind. I used to go to prayer meeting. Gospel Pearls, Wednesday night, Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, Detroit, Michigan. That shaped me fundamentally. Who I am has been deeply inscribed by the black church. The theology, the faith, the power, the movement, the cultural expression, and the style of speech. All of that. I owe that to the black church. I wouldn't even be here without the black church. Period. This is the end of story. I got other stuff to say, but that's just right. I could end it right there. However, like I was saying about I love hip-hop, but I got to be critical. Robert McAfee Brown, a white theologian, said, the church is like Noah's Ark. If it wasn't for the storm on the outside, you couldn't stand the stink on the inside. There is stink on the inside, but there's a hell of a storm outside. People say, I don't want to go to church, all them hypocrites, there's always room for one more. Come on in. The church is problematic in many ways. Don't get it twisted. Some people worship the Bible and not the God the Bible points to. You know, I'm not a bibliolatrist. And I don't understand how black people can be literalists who were outlawed legally to be literate 125 years ago. I just don't get it. How are you going to be literalist about something that you literally couldn't read? That you have to depend upon your spirit, your internal mechanism of literacy, a deeper and profounder form of literacy. So how are you going to be a biblical literacy? It don't say it in the word, therefore it ain't real. First of all, what translation you reading? Secondly, you got a copy of a copy. Of a copy. Of a copy of a copy. Of a copy. Of a copy. Of a copy of a copy. Of a copy! The hell are you talking about? Original. It's Xerox. You know, every time Xerox, it just gets letter, right? It ain't even original language. It was written about 80 to 100 years after the fact. So people's mad. You can't remember what happened last week. I think Jesus said, shine your shoes on Sunday. I think that's... No, he didn't. He said, shine them on Monday. Then people start arguing. He didn't even have no shoes. He had sandals, fool. I don't want to get bogged down in literalism because black people, I don't think we can really afford that. Because the spirit of the gospel is so much more important. You know what I'm saying? For what else would we have to have the Holy Ghost for after Jesus' ascension, whether you take it symbolically or literally? If that was sufficient in the flesh, it's got to be some reinvigoration through a principle of pneuma, spirit, inspiration, breathe. So to take the words literally without understanding their purpose and their content and their spirit and their impulse is rather self-destructive. And black people ought to be ashamed of themselves, you know, because black people start looking at the Bible. What the Bible say to gay people, you know, going to hell, fags can't get into heaven. Slow down. Wait a minute. That's the same gospel that they told you slaves obey your master. And check it out. Slaves obey your master. Women obey your husband. Children obey your father. If you're that man, you got it made. And guess what? The people who wrote it were those men. I don't know what you're going to make of that, but if the lion writes the book, the giraffe ain't going to do well. I don't know. Right? Long necks are vulnerable and to be snapped. That's just the nature of the game. Right? The hunter versus the lion. The hunter write it, he's victorious. The lion write it, he ate him. Different story. Depends on how you write it. So I'm telling you that what's most important when people ask me about, well, God and church and... So, you know, it's hard for me to go to church a lot of times. I love it. I go preach. But it's hard. Because sometimes we're doing stuff that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. You know, you talk about bling. Don't tell me about Jay-Z. When the Remy's in the system, ain't no telling when I love him, will I diss him? That's what they be yelling. I'm a pimp by blood, not relay Sean. Y'all still chase him. I'll replay some, huh? Weather skunk. You know,
you know, I might light your wrist. That is, get you a bracelet, you know, and all this bling. But you go to church, man, in the name of Jesus. You know, the prosperity gospel is like a cancer to me. I don't know. You don't want to know. Don't ask me. It's like a cancer, man. I ain't against people being prosperous. I got a PhD in poverty. Don't want to go back there no more. So I ain't against nobody making dough and getting the heck up out of there. But I'm not going to make that the be-all and the end-all of the gospel. Materialism and commercialism, you go to church, you might as well be at a daggum mall. They're selling petitions to Jesus. I mean, people just up there, you know, they go to some churches, preachers charging $40,000 to $50,000, some of these big-name preachers, to come to church. I mean, that's why I can't get rid of the word nigga. I just can't do that. Come to church, charging $50,000. Some preachers making $60 and $70 million a year. Creflo Dollar, I don't want to call no names. Prosperity gospel. Preaching that the gospel is fundamentally about the accumulation of wealth and the ordering of material prosperity. What about the poor? What about the vulnerable? Do you ever hear them talk about? He different. It's grades, Doc. Because that's an oratorical genius right there. But still, you got to press him. Got to press him hard. But at least he talking about prison people and poor people and going to Africa with AIDS. I give him credit for that. But some of these preachers ain't doing that. They're preaching about bling. They're driving all these cars. They might as well be pimps. Right? That's what we're dealing with. So I'm saying to you that that's perverse to me. The gospel is about, that's why I had an argument with Bill Cosby. Proverbs said that poor people don't have a friend. Nobody will be the friend, Proverbs says, of poor people, but rich people got a bunch of friends. That's why a lot of people jumped on me and got mad. How come you, they defended Cosby much more harder. That's like brother saying, irregardless. Much more harder. That's belt and suspender. Then they defended the poor people who got beat up by him. I'm talking about one dude. He talking about millions of poor people. You mad at me. The dog that barks at the dog that's barking at the enemy. So I'm saying to you, poor people don't have many friends. And in this culture, Jesus organized it so that the church that he founded, or at least the religion he inspired, or the spiritual practice he set forth, was to be concerned about the poor and the vulnerable. So I say the church happens whenever people are concerned about the vulnerable. That's where church happened for me, not just between no walls. You know what? You could be an atheist and be part of the church, man, as far as I'm concerned. If you're doing right, you could be a God-fearing, Bible-toting Christian who hate everybody. The word says, you're going to hell. You wear too much makeup. And then they tell you, it ain't in the word. What does that even mean? Ain't no Jerry Curl wearing Cadillac driving Negroes in the Bible either, but it ain't stopped Negroes from doing it. I ain't seen none up in there. Thou shalt Jerry Curl thy hair. The hell. So, the church happens. The church is not a noun, it's a verb. It's an activity. And I'm more interested in what people do with their lives and their hands and their hearts than I am. If you say that you're part of, listen, don't forget now, the civil rights movement saw the state intervene to keep one set of Christians from killing another. A lot of people who killed black people in the 60s were Christians, white Christians. Ku Klux Klan is Christians too. They queer Christians, but they're Christians. Burning crosses, what they burning? A cross. See what I'm saying? That's Jesus, cross. So that's twisted, but they burning the cross because they believe in a certain kind of God who's a white supremacist. So I'm telling you, religion has done a lot of bad things. Religio, ligare, to bind together, spirit to breathe. I'm saying your religion has been messed up in many ways, perverted and contorted and distorted. So I'm saying it's a noun. No, it's a verb. It's what people do. It's how they enact. a document and a deed of justice. And that's why I find it important to talk about people beyond the boundaries of one single ecclesiastical order or religious truth. It's about those who are willing to put their lives on the line in defense of the vulnerable. That's where I find God most powerfully focused. So that's why we need to support any religious tradition. Ready? All right. 15 more questions and we got to go. No. All right. A couple more. Yes. In the back there. Thank you for coming. Good night. I feel like Russell Simmons. Thank you for coming. Good night. Yes, sir. Okay.
How you doing? First, I'd like to thank you for all that you have done for people of African descent here in America and throughout the world. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Buy a book on the way out.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, did I say that? Did I speak against commercialism and materialism? My God, buy a book, buy five of them for your friends on the way out. Yes, sir. What were you saying?
Now, I actually haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but
just... Okay, next. No,
so as I said here,
don't let that stop you from commenting. Yes, sir, go ahead.
So as I said here, and I looked through some of the chapters, or what you call tracks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And listened to your speech earlier. You were talking about, Manichaeism and either-or, looking at things more complex, as mm-hmm. opposed to understanding things really in a simplistic fashion, right?
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
And in your speech earlier, you spoke about homoeroticism in hip-hop.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen over the past year or so, all right, is and I would like you to speak to the dangers, okay, of this critique of homoeroticism in hip hop. Because mm-hmm. it seems that a lot of times the critique has been to say is to reduce heteroeroticism to homoeroticism, all right, in the context. And what I mean by that, if you see 50 Cent pull off his shirt, all of a sudden he gay. Okay, all right. So I want you to speak to the complexities of that.
Mm-hmm. Just complex,
and I think it's dangerous there too, but I think that it is value and that does need to be addressed.
Yes, sir. Right. Well, that depends on if you find homosexuality problematic. You may or may not, I don't know. Do you?
No, not at all.
Okay, so if you don't find that problematic. No, I didn't say he was gay, I said he was appealing to gay people. Okay. See what I'm saying? He could be heterosexual, as he is. We assume. So what I'm saying to you. I'm saying, I don't know nothing about him. I mean, all right, I'm assuming he's heterosexual, right? That's right, and given his homophobia, although some of the most homophobic persons are, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, y'all make up your own mind. But what I'm saying to you is that, I'm not saying, that's a great point you made, actually. And I'm saying that just because you appeal to gay people don't mean you gay, but I'm just saying, it's ironic to me that you're homophobic while you're appealing to gay people. You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that just because he pulls his shirt off, he's gay. I said he might as well be a Robert Mapplethorpe poster. Well, it doesn't have to be intent. It can be a consequence, right? My pastor used to tell me, a mosquito doesn't intend any harm, but the consequence could be the transmission of malaria. So intentionality does not exhaust consequentiality, as you say. So intentionality may be irrelevant in terms of looking at the material effect or tracking its consequence. It's a brilliant point. But at the same time, it don't really make much difference if you dying from the disease, whether you intended to get it or not. You see what I'm saying? But furthermore, that's a brilliant point you're raising, though, is that whether they intend to do it or is the consequence. Isn't that all? I'm not saying it's irrelevant, but if it gets signifying potential within culture, it's useful. And I'm saying what's useful to gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual people could be all of this pomposity of testosterone that's being paraded in the name of a virulent masculinity that is inveterately heterosexual, that is straight up male, that's on the straight tip, and yet it signifies at the same time in homoerotic fashion. I'm not saying it's intended, but it does. Look, that's why I said turn the sound down and see them cats falling on each other. Writhing together, three or four of them. Group hug, okay, right. Patting on the booty. I saw a picture in Jet Magazine recently, it's no lie, with LeBron James and with, what's the dude from Brazil with the hair on his team? What's his name? Virgil. Hugging him from behind. Trust me, that picture was quite interesting. I wish I could put it up on the screen right here. You can see it. It was like a lover's hug. It was like a lover's kiss. He was holding him like this. That's cool. I'm glad he was that secure in his masculinity to be able to do that. But don't tell me at the same time that doesn't signify within the context of political economy of homoeroticism in the context. I'm not saying intentionally. I'm not saying deliberately. I'm not saying consciously. But it doesn't mean that. Let me give another example about intentionality and consequentiality that you raised. I was on a panel recently debating
you know, Nelly and T.I. Smart cats. T.I. is a very smart cat. Nelly is brilliant. Nelly could defend himself. It was amazing, right? He ain't, you know, ain't nobody. He ain't taking backseat to nobody. You know, who knew? It's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. They don't sleep on him. All that stuff. He said, how am my career going to get reduced to swiping a credit card down a woman's ass? And that's all I did. And I've been doing stuff for years and years and years to help people and blood drives and so. True. Great point. But I asked him, was it still wrong? I mean, was it, you know? He said, look, it was an adult video made for adult audiences. I didn't make it for wide circulation. Okay, that's legitimate. Whether you like it or not, people do consume pornography. Whether you dig that or not, that is a legitimate market to be bought and consumed. Girls gone wild. Ain't nothing but permissible pornography, right? Until Snoop got involved. So it was interesting, right? Because when the black male psyche and sexual organ gets interned and entwined, things get interesting.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.